Study of Shmuel Beis, and we are in chapter 15, Perek Tes Vav, and we're up to Pasuk Yud, verse number 10. And what we had done the first nine psukim is that we saw that Avshalom, who we already know was one of David's son, he's beginning what's known as Avshalom's rebellion, which we're going to be spending significant time on over the coming weeks. And we first saw him starting to ride with an entourage, again, kind of a very quiet way of gaining stature. And then we saw that he worked the crowd. All those who would come to Yerushalayim to seek judgment, to seek David as a shofet, as a judge, he would sweet-talk them. He would say how I would be on your side. We had that phrase, the Vayiganev Avshalom Eslev Anshei Yisrael, he stole the hearts of the Jewish people. It was then that Avshalom came to his father David and said, I need to go to Hebron. The story was that he needed to bring a karban, but he wanted to launch his rebellion in Hebron. And under the cover story of just bringing a karban, David has no reason to say no. And David says, you know, you can go. And we concluded that Avshalom picked up and he went to Hebron. Now, who did he take with him to Hebron? What was happening in Hebron? That's where we're picking up the story. Pasuk Yud. Vayishlach Avshalom miraglim b'chol shiftei Yisrael lemor. Avshalom sent out spies. The Tanakh uses the word miraglim, which usually means spies. They're not on a mission, as we're about to see, they're not on a mission to find out information. They're on a mission to remain in secret or to remain in hiding for a certain amount of time and then do something. So perhaps, you know, the term miraglim in Tanakh, and again, we would have to do some type of study, is it ever used when you're not spying out information, but you're just undercover? Maybe it's another way of the Tanakh telling us that these are undercover agents. I mean, normally we have undercover agents in the time of Moshe and the time of Yoshua. They're miraglim, they're going to spy things out to bring back information. Here, they have information that they're going to hold, and they're going to disseminate at the right time. But they're going to be undercover. And he sends them b'chol shiftei Yisrael throughout all 12 tribes, because he's located in Hebron, which is in the tribe of Yehuda. So he's sending out to all the other tribes. And he says as follows, Kishma'acham es kol ha-shofar. When you hear the sound of the shofar, that's going to be some type of signal that the rebellion has begun. V'yamartem, and that should be your cue that you should say, Malach Avshalom b'Hebron, that Avshalom has become king in Hebron. So he has them all in place so that when, and again, the exact timeline, we don't hear, it's not an exact play-by-play, but whenever and presumably you have to imagine that there's going to be a way for the shofar to be blown, so he's probably going to have to send out, even if we don't hear about it, he's going to send out other people to blow a shofar, and it's going to have to be that these miraglim know the difference between that shofar and maybe some other type of shofar, right? There's no way to just text them and say the rebellion is on. And their goal is they're going to be the announcing the rebellion, b'chol shiftei Yisrael, all over Israel. And we already seen that Avshalom's tactics from before, he has their people who are in favor of Avshalom all throughout the country. And so this will be everyone's way of finding out the information. And for an ancient time, it seems like it's pretty efficient. He's going to have everyone in place already, and then everyone's going to make the announcement at the same time. Instead of, let's say, town after town after town, which maybe you could imagine that David or whoever's going to be anti-Avshalom could try to get the message out that David is still king. But if it's all happening instantly, then the side of David is not going to be able to do anything to, right? Avshalom's going to be in control of the news cycle. He's going to be in control of the message going out. Which is really quite brilliant.
How do they hear the shofar all throughout?
So again, there has to be some type. You know, you have to imagine for this to work, he'd then have to send out, you know, I don't know, 100 messengers to start blowing shofar. But at least when they hear the shofar, everyone will know what to do. It'll follow the cue. Again, it's how loud. A shofar can be loud, but it's not. It's not a loudspeaker, but it means that they're in place to spread the word. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Ves Avshalom Halchu Masayim Ish Mirushalayim. Kind of with Avshalom, they went 200 men from Yerushalayim. Kiruim v'holchim lisumam. Kiruim, they were called or they were invited. V'holech litumam, they went, litumam is from the word tam. Right? We have, in the Pesach Seder, we use the word tam to mean simple. Innocent. They went innocently. V'lo yadu chol davar. These 200 people who went from Yerushalayim knew nothing about the rebellion. And the question is who they are and what good is it taking them out of Yerushalayim if they don't know what's being accomplished. So there are a number of interpretations. The fact that they don't know what's going on, many presume that these were people who were loyal to David. And what's happening is two things. They are not going to be in Yerushalayim when the rebellion is announced. And if they're not in Yerushalayim, they can't help David because they're just not there. At the same time, David is going to look around Yerushalayim and he's going to see that 200 of his loyal followers are missing. Whether he's going to know the exact number, but it's going to be noticeable. And presume these might have been important people. So when David's going to hear that the rebellion's been announced, and these 200 people aren't present, it's almost like it's all to trick David that the rebellion is stronger than it is. The fact that he's going to hear these 200 men are with Avshalom in Hebron, even if they're not on Avshalom's side, the appearance is there. Now, Rashi quotes from a Gemara in the Yerushalmi, basically implies that David was a little concerned with Avshalom going away, because the last time he went to do something, that was when he made the party and used the cover of the party to kill Amnon. So David gave him a shtar, David gave him a document that allowed him to invite two people to come along to this journey. But it never said which two people. And this Medrash says that Avshalom took it to two people, and then took it to another two people, and then took it to another two people, with a signed piece of paper basically saying, David has given permission for you to, or is encouraging you to come with me. And so that's how he kind of convinced these 200 to come. They may have been so innocent, they may have been so unknowing, they might have been able to be turned. That it could be, Avshalom thought that if he gets them out of the city, if he gets them away from David, if he shows them perhaps the other people that he's gaining support from, maybe these individuals could be turned, and so he'd have them on his side. However you want to explain it, it has to be that Avshalom is thinking long and hard, and this is part of his strategic plan. And it could be, right, had he told them in advance, they would never want to go to the city, or they would never want to follow him. We're about to see that he had already convinced one very wise individual, which we're about to talk to now and we're going to see later in the story. And it could be some of Farshim think that Avshalom thought that if he has the individual's name, as we'll see in the next pasuk, is Achitofel, who was an advisor of David, a very brilliant individual. And it could be that Avshalom thought that if he has Achitofel on his side, Achitofel will be able to convince these 200 people, specifically these invited guests, to join the rebellion. Pasuk Yud Beis, Vayishlach Avshalom es Achitofel Hagiloni. Avshalom sent for Achitofel, who was from Gilon. Yoetz David, he's described as the advisor, the counselor of David. Meiro Migilo, from his city, the city of Gilo. Bizavcho es Zevachim, as he was shechting and slaughtering the offerings, because right, that was his reason to go to Hebron, and he did. That's kind of one part, that's like half the pasuk. And then we kind of have a concluding phrase of the pasuk, which you would almost have imagined it would be in its own pasuk, because it says, Vayihi hakesher amitz, v'ha'am holech v'rav esav shalom. This may be the first time we have the word kesher. The word kesher here means rebellion. It's used throughout Sefer Melachim. The Metziyos Tzion defines it as Hamered, the rebellion, and every time, at least not going forward, and unfortunately in Sefer Malachim, there are many stories of rebellion, of knocking out a sitting king through assassinations and other plots. The word is Kesher. So Vayiha Kesher Amitz, the rebellion was very strong, was very powerful. Va'am Holech V'Raves Avshalom. There was a tremendous amount of, right, Va'am Holech, the people were going V'Rav, and there were many, Es Avshalom, with Avshalom, he had a tremendous amount of support from the people, from the masses. And we had said either, we had said ideas of either, you know, they had thought that David was no longer fit to lead, or the guidance is coming more from, you know, this whole episode is some form of level of punishment for what happened with Bathsheba and with Uriah. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is guiding this to happen this way, that the people, at least initially, are taken with Avshalom. Maybe they're taken by how handsome he was, as we described.
So what do the words Yitkashru ba'aguda achat mean from Mitzudat Tzion? Like, he's explaining why they use the word, why Kesher is merit. Like, why does Kesher mean rebellion?
Al Shem Sheba'alei HaMered Yiskashru Ba'aguda Achas. I should have explained that. The word Kesher is a knot.
Right.
So how does a good rebellion, right? If an individual living in some other country wants to lead a rebellion, and he or she alone is going to lead the rebellion, it's probably not going to go very far. In order to lead a successful rebellion, you have to have a group. So the Kesher comes from the fact that, at least the way the Mitzvah Tzion defines it, is that people have to band together to rebel. So because a successful rebellion will only come from a group and you have to be united, right? If you have too much friction in the rebellion, it's not going to probably be successful. So that's where the word Kesher, not, comes from. They're tied together with one idea. Now, what's interesting...
Aguda's idea?
Aguda is a tie, or a bundle.
It's a tie, okay.
Okay. Like a grouping together.
So tied together, like,
right? Aguda like achas, okay, is one bundle.
Okay.
It's interesting, and again, I don't know how much weight we should give this, but the pasuk is divided into half. Right? We point this out often, that the asnachta, the semi pause, is under the word zivachim. Mm-hmm. So we have clause number one in the sentence is that Achitofel was invited, and clause number two is really you would have expected it to be a sentence in and of itself, because it's talking about everything up until now. The rebellion, it was really, really strong. But maybe what the pasuk is coming to say is what the last piece in order for the rebellion to begin on a successful way was to have Achitofel. Was to have Achitofel present. That his brilliance and his leadership and his counsel, that made the rebellion, at least at this stage, right? And especially if you want to read this the best way possible, is the best way to read it is to not know what's going to happen at the end, or at least to be thinking in our head, this rebellion may go ahead and actually, you know, get rid of David forever. And so again, we don't believe that it was a right rebellion, but it had all the materials for a successful rebellion, all the ingredients, including having Achitofel. Now, why is Achitofel interested? If he's defined as Yoetz David, why is it that he wants to jump ship and handle the side of and be on the side of Avshalom?
So he's not an innocent guy, they're saying?
By deciding to join Avshalom, he's choosing to be guilty.
But maybe he's
going.
But
he was invited to, like, because Rashi.
He joins in.
Right.
He
not
joins in.
I'm saying, but at this point, he goes in maybe just to keep an eye on Avshalom or something. You know,
so it's presumed that he went in wanting to be part of the rebellion. The question is why he wants to be part of the rebellion.
So he didn't get the letter from David that David gave Avshalom.
Right, this is some type of, this is separate.
Join,
this is
separate,
exactly.
He didn't get that
this is separate.
Got it.
Now, the question is, why would Achitofel want to be with Avshalom? So who is Achitofel? Achitofel is the grandfather of Bathsheba. Bathsheba's father's name was Eliam, and Eliam's father is Achitofel. So you could say that he has it out for David, because David clearly did not treat his granddaughter with much respect. The only problem with that approach is if he is Bathsheba's grandfather, Bathsheba is now married to David. She now produced a son to David, which is Achitophel's great-grandson. And whether Achitophel knows or doesn't know, he is, all sons of David are in line to take over for being king. So if all sons of David are in line for being king, why would he want to choose Avshalom over his great-grandson, Shlomo? And we know he actually becomes king, but Achitophel might not know that. But it doesn't, it's definitely a little striking, why would he side with a brother to Shlomo as opposed to siding with Shlomo? Meaning, why take revenge against David for having treated Bathsheba inappropriately? But think about what happens in the life of Bathsheba if David's no longer king.
Yeah, I was going to say, she has if David's status now.
Right.
She's the king of,
she's one of the wives. Right. We know that there are many wives, but that seems to be, you know, normal for a king. Right. So it seemed, we could all understand why Achitophel doesn't have a soft spot for David. But now, in terms of, he must care about Bathsheba and Shlomo, and what happens to them if he sides with Achitophel. So there's another theory that perhaps Achitophel had some type of Ruach HaKodesh, some type of divine spirit rest on him, and show him that someone from his family was going to become king at some point. And that thought went to his head. And he immediately thought that it's him. So how could he lead a rebellion? How could he become king if he sides with Avshalom? And he has Avshalom become king, and then he knocks off Avshalom, then he could be king.
Why would he even think that he could be king? And we have all these sons.
It's not really so
remote, the idea.
Again, he sees with some type of divine intervention that someone from his family is going to become king. Mm. And we know that that's actually true.
Right.
But it's his great-grandson, it's Shlomo, who's at this point, 6 or 9 years old at the time.
Right.
And so these are some of the theories behind Achitophel. You could go with another theory, just simple shot, that he made the decision. Maybe it has nothing to do with it. Maybe he's not thinking about Bathsheba at all. He thinks that David is no longer fit to be king. And he thinks Avshalom should be king. And if it's not going to go to Avshalom naturally, maybe he still thinks, he's going back and he thinks that even though that Avshalom killed Amnon had it coming to him. We don't know for sure. But Achitophel joins in, and we're going to see it plays a big role.
Was he an advisor only since David married Bathsheba, or from?
You're saying because we haven't heard about him
right. So
much. I'm not sure. Good question.
When did he come into the picture, basically?
Right. Now the fact that she lived in Yerushalayim, it could be that her family, including her grandfather, was somewhat close to David even from before.
Right.
But there's no way to say that. So now that the rebellion is going well, meaning it's been launched. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayavo HaMagid El David Lemor, someone who would be a Magid, someone who was telling the news, came to David as saying as follows, Hayalev Ish Yisrael Acharei Avshalom. It's kind of a strange way to announce that there's a rebellion going on. It says, the heart of the people of Israel follows Avshalom. That was his way of saying there's a rebellion. Because when we see David's reaction, David is clearly reacting to a rebellion. Not like Avshalom just made an announcement that he wants to be the crown prince and that he should be selected. This is David's reaction, as we're about to see, is going to be to flee Yerushalayim. You only flee Yerushalayim if you're expecting an army of soldiers led by Avshalom to come towards the capital city and conquer it and conquer you and lead a real rebellion. The phrase definitely matches what we saw previously where it said, Vayiganev Avshalom es lev anshei Yisrael. And here it's now out in the open because the announcer of news is coming to say, Hayalev ish Yisrael acharei Avshalom. Maybe the Tanakh is trying to tell us that David heard the words of rebellion. He heard Avshalom is leading a rebellion. Avshalom has announced himself as king in Hebron. But for David to take the rebellion to heart, not to use that word, but I guess, if David comes to the realization that the people are behind Avshalom, then it's a real threat. If it's Avshalom, kind of, we're not going to be able to do it now, but if we were privileged to learn the story of the second rebellion with Adoniah, it was a much smaller, David's second son who rebelled, it was a much smaller size rebellion. And it stopped a lot quicker, it stopped a lot, in a more peaceful way. It could be the strength of the rebellion lies in the fact that the people are behind this. And if the lave ish Yisrael is following Avshalom, then this is a rebellion that has to be taken really seriously. And then David's decision is, how do you deal with the rebellion? And the two main approaches is fight or flight. Do you fight the rebellion? And at this point, we'd have to think that David at least has a chance. He's got Yoav on his side. He still has a military. He is the sitting king. But David chooses otherwise. The pasuk Gedalik. Vayomer David l'chol avadav asher ito v'Yerushalayim. David turned to all of his servants who were with him in Yerushalayim, and he said as follows: Kumu v'nivracha. Kumu, arise, v'nivracha, and let us borech, let us run away. Ki lo tie lanu fleita mipnei ha-shalom. There's no, fleita means to escape. It could be used as talking about someone who already escaped. When, I don't know if it's the first time, but definitely one of the first times that the word is used in Chumash is when Og comes to tell Avraham about the fact that his nephew Lot was captured. It describes Lot as running away from the war with the kings and the capture of Lot. It describes him as has hapalit, the one who escaped. So it could be talking about a person who did escape, or it could be talking about the idea of escape. It's one of the powerful phrases when you're aware of it in the Yalla V'Yavo prayer that we say on Rosh Chodesh and on Yom Tov. So we ask Hashem lifleita. We're asking Hashem for an escape. And sometimes, right, for the Jewish people who are stuck in exile, an escape would mean, it's a powerful word.
Modern Hebrew, plitim, are refugees, right?
Uh-huh.
Which is throwing them out of, fleeing where they're from.
Right, and on the one hand, a refugee is in a terrible situation because they don't necessarily have a place to go, but it's also talking about the fact that they were able to escape wherever hardship they were, coming from. So David is saying to the people, Ki lo tie lanu fleita mipnei Avshalom. There is no escape from before Avshalom. If we stay here, we're going to confront Avshalom, and there's no escape. Therefore, maharu laleches, hurry up to go. Pen yemaher, lest he, meaning lest Avshalom, hurry up, v'yisiganu, and reach us. V'yidiach aleinu es hara, v'yidiach, from a language of dacha, which is like to push, doche, that he'll push upon us evil. V'hika ha'ir l'ficharev, and he'll strike the city with the blade of the sword. To push upon us evil, David doesn't only mean that Avshalom will do bad to us. He means, at this point, that there will be a battle. Right now, David is ready to have this rebellion without any bloodshed. To have Avshalom, he's ready to leave the capital city. He's ready to have the rebellion happen, and almost throw up his hands to Hashem, saying whatever, and we're going to see him say such similar sounding phrases, that whatever Hashem wants. It's very similar to what happened. It sounds very similar to his approach in the time that he was running from Shaul. That, listen, if Shaul's going to kill me, he's going to kill me. Hashem has promised to take care of me, and it's going to happen. David has to realize, and Mefarshim understand this, David has to realize that and he does realize that this has to be some level of punishment for the episode of David and Bathsheba. He had been told by Nasan that that more punishments were on their way, and so he wants to run. But if he doesn't, he does not want Avshalom to catch up, because if Avshalom catches up, there's gonna be battle. And the battle, right, the phrase of v'yidiach aleinu asara, he's going to push upon us the evil, he's going to make us fight. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to say that you're peaceful. David is saying we're peaceful. But if the arrows start flying and the swords start clashing, David and his men are going to defend themselves, and then there's going to be a civil war between David's men and Avshalom's men, between David and Avshalom, and David wants no part of that. And additionally, he says, v'yikaha ir lefi charith. This is David's capital city. His dream is Yerushalayim. He's still hoping for the day when the Beis Hamikdash is going to be built by one of his sons, as Nasan Hanavi told him. You can't be the one to build it, but your son will build it. The Aron is in Yerushalayim. He doesn't want the city to be defiled by battle. And so if he leaves the city, and as we see, Avshalom comes to the city, so there's no reason for Avshalom to destroy the city. Avshalom's dream, ultimate dream, is for him to be king in Yerushalayim. And presumably, he also wants to build a Beis HaMikdash. He also knows father's dream. And we pointed out last week, we're still not sure, did Avshalom just want to become king and convince David to retire, take early retirement and be king emeritus? Or did Avshalom have it out for David and want to actually kill him, because that's the only way to have a successful rebellion? But David doesn't want any violence at this point, and he doesn't want anything coming to the city. Pasuk Tesvav. So the servants of David say to the king, whatever my master, the king, Yivchar, whatever he chooses, talking to him with respect in third person, behold, here are your servants, meaning we'll do whatever you want. It's a question that you don't have an answer to. You would have, right, if I told you that one person stood up and said, we shouldn't run, but we should fight, who would that be?
Yoav.
All right, Yoav's not a runner. Yoav doesn't run from a fight. Yoav provokes fights, maybe. Yoav is Mr. Tough Guy. He's silent here. Now, is it possible that he wasn't there? I don't know. It's definitely a question. The next pasuk, I'm going to raise another question that you could try your best to come up with an answer. And I really think the only thing you can explain is that it's part of the divine plan. It doesn't make any sense. Pasuk Tes Zayin. Vayetze HaMelech V'chol Beiso Biraglav. The king and his entire household went by foot. Right? Until now, we've been talking about David is telling his avadim, but his house is full of family members, his wives, his children, besides Avshalom. So the king goes out, v'chol beiso biraglav, they go by foot. Some of Farshim say when it says biraglav, because it's going to say that this pasuk and next pasuk, it means biraglav. He made the decision to go by foot as opposed to by animal. He wanted to be able to be a little more, again, he has a very large group of people, but for some reason he thinks that they'll be less detected by others if they go by foot as opposed to by animal. So they're specifically going by foot. So everyone goes, right? It says v'chol beiso. They all go, which is means his servants, means his wives, means vayazov hamelech es eser nashim pilagshim lishmor habayis. And the king left 10 of his wives, the ones who were concubines, lishmor habayis, to guard the house, to keep the house.
It's a little strange. You think he'd leave some military?
It seems very
them.
It seems strange on so many levels, because I would say better, not better, just different. I think he should leave no one. Meaning
no one.
His mission is to not have any form of battle, and to not have any form of confrontation. So therefore, you know, you have to imagine the shock of Avshalom. Avshalom should come to Yerushalayim, to the palace. It should be empty. Not a soul. Right? So he'll march in. You know, you have to imagine he'll go sit on the throne. He'll find David's crown. He'll start, you know, wearing all the royal garments. Now, if you're gonna leave someone lishmor habayis to guard the house, so what does it mean to guard the house or keep the house? If you really want to guard the house, then you have to leave military men. So,
you would think that Avshalom is going to end up killing these
right
people, you know,
or just the servants to keep the house running.
Don't so, I get.
What it was, right?
So, I really think the only way to make sense of this is that this is part of the Gzeres Hamelech, capital Hey. That Hashem wanted this to happen. He wanted David to leave these 10 Pilagshim there, and we're going to see what happens to them in the future. But it just doesn't fit. Meaning, even if it, now he might think that there's no way if he leaves 10 innocent women there, there's no way that Avshalom is going to harm them. So leave all the women. Avshalom won't harm any woman, maybe. But so I don't know. I didn't see any good explanation, other than the fact that these women are going to play a role in the story, and in order for them to play a role in the story, whether it's a passive role or an active role or a passive role, they need to be there, and so they were left there. But it doesn't sound that it was like a, you know, like a child left behind on a class trip. You know, it doesn't. Because it says, if it would have just said "Vayazov Hamelech es Eser Nashim Pilagshim," he left them. That would almost sound like he left them, like he forgot about them, and they're just there. But it says "Lishmor Habayis." It's basically said. He said, you know, we don't know these women's names. They're not the official. They were wives who we knew of as wives, and then there were Pilagshim. A concubine is a type of wife.
Are any women in that time fighters? I mean, they're.
I don't think so. I don't think so. The Lishmor HaBayis. Again,
could it not mean guard? Could it just really mean keep it running?
But what? Or make the beds? For who?
Yeah.
For who?
Or like distraction. Dust. Do you know what I mean?
So that when Avshalom comes in, it'll
There's
be a
clean.
Right. You have to, again, so.
No, but maybe they're just buying Dubin more time to flee further.
Right, but then he's sacrificing these women who are his wives. I mean,
it looks that way.
The Gemara says that there's a difference between a wife and a pilegesh, a concubine.
So was he
the difference between a wife and a concubine has to do with legalities of ksuba, of financial responsibility. But uniquely, when it comes to a pilegesh of a king, can never become the pilegesh of anybody else. Meaning, once you're a wife of a king, even if the king dies, you're not able to, you know, right? We've discussed that before. It doesn't, again. So,
not even the new king.
So they are like wives. It's not like
yeah. No, exactly. No, they're wives.
So it's not like
they don't have the same protection.
They don't have the same financial protection. But as you know, if you're going to be a pilegesh, you have to imagine that if you're the pilegesh of a king, you get taken care of, you know, in a royal manner. So just the fact that David leaves them, as opposed to he has servants, he could just leave servants. Again, I think the question is greater than any of the answers, and it's the bigger picture. It's unfortunate that this has to happen, but this is part of the divine plan.
Were there other Pilagsh, or whatever you call them.
How many are left?
Yeah, that he
so,
took
I mean,
with him.
We know that there are 18 wives, right, and then include the Pilagshim. If you start counting on his wife, it doesn't sound like there are too many Pilagshim left. Right? Shouldn't it be like Pilagshot, but it's not.
Yeah, that's...
Nashim, it's all... the right. Way, yeah. So we're not...
We're not
the
going
grammar.
There now.
Yeah.
Well, how many wives are there?
18.
No, that's including.
Including.
How many real wives?
We saw six, and then Batsheva is seven. So it's close. It's close.
So when Yaakov took, so he had four wives, Yaakov, right?
Yaakov had four wives.
So, and two of them were like originally servants, right?
Yes.
So were they regular wives?
Or did they have the status of a pilegesh?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I
don't know what would be the difference.
But
what would be the difference?
I don't know. That's what I was trying to figure out. Like, is there like
again? So the Mishnah or the Gemara talks about the financial responsibilities are different, right?
But there must be more status if you're.
That's what I'm trying to wonder. Is there more status if you're a regular wife?
I mean, listen. The sons of Leah definitely thought so. Because they spoke down to the sons of the Shvachos.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So they're there. Pasuk Yudzayin. Vayetze Hamelech v'chol ha'am b'raglav. Again, they really left on foot. Vayamdu beis hamerchak. They stopped at a house that was a faraway distance. What that house is doesn't really say. Someplace far. The first stop that they made was at a distance.
Must have been a big house.
Right. The Targum translates the house as ba'atar. Atar usually just means like a place. Mm-hmm. So whether we don't know the exact number. We're gonna hear that he has this is a group of got to be a couple hundred people. We're gonna hear one number, and it has to be even larger than that, because we're gonna hear there's one subgroup. In this pasuk, we'll read about it. There's one subgroup, and that subgroup is 600. That doesn't include the family and the servants. So it could very well be there's a group of 1,000 people. So to say there's a house capable of fitting 1,000, it's very hard.
So he's leaving not with just the people from his castle.
It might be, but when you add it all up. Well, we're going to hear about two subgroups in just a second. So v'chol avadav ovrim al yado, pasuk yirches. All of his servants passed along al yado, right next to David. V'chol ha-kresi, v'chol ha-plesi. The kresi and the plesi are, if you translate them, it's those who use bow and arrows and those who use slingshots. There are a whole bunch of opinions on who this group of people may be. They may have been families that were prominent families. There was a family called Crazy and a family called Placy. It might be a reference to the Urim V'Tumim of the Kohen Gadol, and it may be a reference to the Sanhedrin, the great court that was in Yerushalayim, that they came along with David. However, some type it definitely seems to hint towards something prominent, again, maybe spiritually prominent. V'chol ha-gitim, and all of the gitim, sheish meosh ish, this was a group of 600 men, asher ba'u biraglo migas, right, we hear why they called gitim, because they came by foot from the city of Gas, ovrim al pnei ha-melech, they passed before the king. Now, Gas is a city that we're all familiar with. It's one of the Plishti cities. It's the city that David ran away to successfully for a number of months. Right? He first ran to the Plishtim, and it was not successful. And the second time he came, he was able to stay with the Plishtim for a number of months. And so some of Farshim explained this group of Gitim who came from Gas, they were not Jewish, but they had come under the influence of David. They became pro-David during his time in the Plishtim, and they stayed close. They stayed close with David all these years, and now they sided with David at the time of the rebellion, and so they came along. They came along for the ride. If you don't want to say that, then it could just be that clearly they come from Gas. But it could be that they don't know David for so long, but it's something more recent, and they're with David. Now it seems that they have a leader. That's in Pasuk Yotas. Vayomer HaMelech El Itai Hagiti. The king said to a man by the name of Itai, who was a Giti, so he's from this group, Lama Telech Gam Ata Itanu. Why should you also go along with us? Now is he talking about him alone, or is he talking about the whole group? Shuv v'shev im hamelech. Go and dwell with the king. Who's the king? He's actually referring to Avshalom. Go and, Rashi says, go and live im hamelech with the new king. Ki nachriata, for you are a stranger. V'gam goleh ata limkomecha. And should I exile, right? And you're the gam gole, you are in exile, the gam gole ata, and you are also in exile, lim komecha, to your place, meaning you could go back to your place, you could go back to where you came from. You are a gole, you are a refugee from Gas, so go back to Gas. whatever you do, don't come with me. This is ridiculous. You can go to the new king because he'll have nothing against you, or you can go home. You shouldn't come along with me. Now, is Ittai representing the entire group? Is he alone? That's a question that we're not sure of. Is he Jewish or is he not Jewish? So there are a number of opinions. Some say he was not Jewish. He was from Gass, and he had become aware of David, and he stayed on the David bandwagon. And even though he wasn't Jewish, he looked to David to be. He'd rather live in a Jewish country with David as king than remain in the Eretz Plishtim, in Gass. You could also explain that he was a Jew, and either for whatever reason he was born in Gass or he lived in Gass, he got the title of being a Giti, even though he wasn't a biological Plishti. If you read the pasuk when he calls him Nachri Ata, so Nachri is one of the ways more rabbinically in rabbinic language. One of the ways to refer to a non-Jew is a Nachri. It's actually some people that even have the text in the morning when they say the brachot of Shalo Asani Goy. There are some who say Shalo Asani Nachri because that's the original language in the Gemara. So for David to turn to a Jew and say Ki Nachri, it's a little hard, unless he's trying to say he's trying to just highlight the fact that he's a stranger, that he's a foreigner, and therefore he doesn't have to be involved in this mess. And David keeps pleading, Pasuk Chaf, Timol yesterday Boecha. Yesterday you came. Doesn't necessarily mean yesterday. It means you're only recent. You're relatively recent that you're a part of me and a part of my following. V'hayom, and today, Aniacha imanu l'aleches. Today, Aniacha, should I be the cause of you how do you translate Aniacha? Right? Should I be the cause of you to move Imanu with us, like the word na, the Shorish nun aleph, nun ayin means to move or to shake. So should I be the cause of your moving Imanu Lalecha with us, Lalechas to go? Va'ani holech al asher ani holech. I am going to go where I'm going to go. Shuv, but you should return Beheshev Vesachecha Imach and return your brothers with you. So this implies that he is part of that bigger group that we mentioned a few psukim ago. Chesed ve'emes. You should go back, Chesed ve'emes, that either it's an idea of David saying, by me asking you not to go with me, I'm doing for you a chesed v'emes. I'm doing for you chesed because it's not to come with me is just going to be trouble. He may also be hinting that if you come with me, this might only be something that's chesed v'emes. This meaning any good that you do for me, I might not ever be able to repay you. Because we know the end of the story. And we know that David remains king. But David doesn't know that he's going to remain king. And if he doesn't remain king, if he's going to be taken... If this the rebellion is successful, David's never going to be able to repay anyone who helped him. And so he's turning to him and saying, if you don't do this, by coming with me, it's a chesed ve'emes. It's something that will just be a kindness. Right? A lot of times we refer to the chesed shel emes. We refer to that as kindness done in a situation, usually where someone has passed away, where anytime, right, if I give you a ride to the supermarket, in the back of my mind, I might be thinking the next time that I have a flat tire, you'll stop to help me because I once drove you to the supermarket. But when the person has passed away, there's no way for the individual person to help. That's a chesed shel emes. There's no way you're going to be paid back. David might be hinting to that. If you try to help me, this might just be a chesed shel emes that I'm not going to be able to repay you. So David is saying, don't come with me. Don't come with me. And Ittai, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayan Ittai es HaMelech. Ittai answered the king, Vayomar, and he said, Chai Hashem, by the life of Hashem, which he, either he's swearing Either he's a Jew who's swearing in the name of God, or he's a foreigner, but out of respect to David, he's swearing in the name of David's God. V'chei Adoni HaMelech, and by the life of my master, the king, meaning at this point, he's right. David referred to Avshalom as HaMelech. He's referring to David, rightfully, as HaMelech. Ki bimkom asher yesham, Adoni HaMelech, in the place that my master, the king, meaning you, will be there, im lamaves, im lachayim, if it's for death, if it's for life, ki sham yeh avdecha. There will your servant be.
It's like Ruth and Naomi.
It's exactly like Ruth and Naomi. Beautiful. So Rav Bazak in his lectures points that it's like screaming off the page.
Right.
There are a lot of similarities, right? You have someone who was in a position of power who's now kind of powerless, right? Naomi was in a position of power. She was the wife of this very important person with a lot of money, and then everybody dies on her and she's alone. David is the king, and now he's, you know, on the run. And you have this foreigner, right? The same way that Rus Hamoviah was a foreigner, Ittai is described as a Nachri. He's described as a foreigner. And you have the Jewish person who used to be prominent saying, don't come with me, don't follow me, what do you need this for? Go back home. And you have the foreigner saying, no, right? Whither thou goest, I shall go. I'm going to follow you, whether it's to life, whether it's to death. I'm with you. My allegiance is with you. So Rav Bazak pointed out was that perhaps, it's almost kind of obvious that the greatest reward that Rus could ask for after she went ahead and helped her mother-in-law in the greatest of way is that years later when her great-grandson is on the run and is also in a situation of needing help, that another foreigner comes along, you know, kind of pay it forward and pay it back to the lineage of Rus. So it definitely, and this individual Ittai, he seems to be of, you know, the highest character, and he says I'm with you no matter what. Vayo pasuk chafbez. Vayomer David el Ittai. So David said to Ittai, Lech va'avor. So go then ahead and pass. Vayavor Ittai hagiti v'chol anashav. So Ittai, the Giti, and all of his men, they went. V'chol ataf asher ito, and all of the children who were with him. We had not heard about that previously, but I guess you have to imagine that if the Gittim were there with 600 people, that they also had families.
Also had women there.
Also had women. Why they're not mentioned? Now, I didn't see anyone talk about the fact that what's interesting is, and maybe if we're trying to draw some type of connection, that David had the same approach to running away from Shaul as he does from running away from Avshalom. So, if you recall, when David was running away from Shaul, he attracted these, like, you know, lowlifes and bandits who became his men. And first he started with 400, and then there came 200 more, and David had 600 men with him. It's just fascinating that of the number that the Tanakh expresses was the number of Gittim, the number of his, you know, call it whatever you want to call it, his personal force is again the number. The number 600. The pasuk of Gimel. V'chol ha'aretz bochim kol gadol. The entire land was crying a loud cry. V'chol ha'am ovrim, and all of the people were passing by. V'amelech over benachal Kidron. The king passed through the Kidron Valley. V'chol ha'am ovrim al pnei derech es hamidbar. Everyone was passing on the road towards the wilderness. So when the pasuk says v'chol ha'aretz bochim kol gadol, it could be that this might be a reference that people who saw David on the run, their reaction was to cry. Or it may be a reference to the fact that just the entire land, meaning even if you were pro Avshalom, the fact that there's a rebellion with a son displacing the father, it's not a joyful time in the country. So v'chol haaretz bochim kol gadol, it might be a reference. It says v'chol haaretz means the people who are on the side of David, they're crying because David is being chased out of the capital city and there's a rebellion against him. But maybe even the people of Avshalom, this is not what everybody wanted. This is not the way they want the succession of power to be. They want the king to lead a nice long life and then his son takes over, or they want some type of ceremony where the king will take off his own crown and give it to his son in front of everyone to show that he's the next king. Not this. No one asked for this. We'll Bez Hashem continue with Pasuk Chav Dalet next time.